For real, you ain't never, you didn't like My Little Pony? We might have problems going forward if you have something bad to say about My Little Pony.
Is this the end of bottom of the map?
It's the end, depending on what you say next. Did you like My Little Pony?
No.
See, it's over. It's done. This has been Bottom of the Map. What's happening? I'm writer, researcher, and professor Dr. Regina Bradley.
I'm music journalist Christina Lee.
From WABE and PRX, this is
Bottom of the Map, taking hip-hop conversation in a new direction.
Miss Christina.
Hi, Regina.
Question.
Yes.
What do you think black music means?
I mean, black music is American music, but I feel like folks would have very particular ideas as to what that means, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think more often than not, they would think about hip-hop. They'll think about R&B.
Mm-hmm. What about country?
I don't think that would be the first genre that comes to mind.
Yeah, I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more. I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm gonna ride till I can't no more.
I got the horses in the back, horse stock is attached.
We're here today because we have questions about, you know, the South and genre. Like, how do we think about genre in Southern popular music? So, clearly, we're going to talk about the rise and what folks want to be the fall of Lil Nas X.
Ooh.
Right? And the Old Town, you know, the whole Old Town Road.
Yes.
Controversy.
Right, right, right.
Or as super producer Floyd calls it, you know, the Black Ole Opry. Do black folks fit into the... You know, into the Ole Opry. You know what the Ole Opry is, right?
Of course.
Yeah, so like my grandma used to watch it every Saturday night.
Aww.
On CMT. It was like the Grand Ole Opry.
It's Saturday night in Nashville, Tennessee. In time for another big half hour of Grand Ole Opry Live here on the National Network. Hi, everybody. I'm Keith Bilbrey. It's a salute to the grand ladies of the Grand Ole Opry tonight. And we've got some of the grandest. Skeeter Davis, Wilma Lee Cooper, and Loretta Lynn. Right now, we're going to go.
One of the things that I think about, let me throw this out to you, right? So, like, when folks write about Southern music, it's really interesting that there's this, like, very specific distinction that a lot of artists are starting to do between Southern and country. Do you think there's a difference?
It's a really interesting question. On one hand, I want to say yes, like, absolutely, because there are these, obviously, metropolitan areas in the South.
Mm-hmm.
We hail from one, being Atlanta. But then again, I'm like, well, why are we making this distinction again? And I know you have some strong feelings.
Well, yeah, because I'm a country girl. So I'm not from Atlanta. I'm from Albany.
Right,
which
right.
is country for real.
Uh-huh.
Okay. But I just think that there's a distinction. But, you know, to put on my scholarly academic hat and tip it to the side.
Okay.
Zandria Robinson is a sociologist who wrote a book called This Ain't Chicago in, like, I want to say 2014. And she theorizes about this thing that's called country cosmopolitanism.
Ooh.
And what country cosmopolitanism is, in a nutshell, is that it's when folks in the South borrow from, like, urban ideas, these more rural ideas, and bring them together to kind of present this new cultural approach.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, she talks about, like, hip-hop's role in that. And I think that if we think about, like, the connections between Southern and country, one of the things I think about is when Southern, like, the region itself was first being introduced to, like, the bi-coastal mainstream hip-hop scene, the South connotated a particular idea of this countryness. And as folks got more comfortable with the idea of there being cities below the Mason-Dixon line, there just starts to be even more, like, really... fracture line distinctions between southernness, countryness, ruralness, urbanity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when I think about like the distinction between southern and country, I don't take offense to being called country because, I mean, shit, that's where I'm from. Like, I'm not from a metropolitan area. You know what I'm saying?
You know what, Otis?
What?
You're country.
That's all right.
You straight from the Georgia woods.
That's good.
You know what? You wear overalls.
The distinction is that when we say country, that like suggests a really negative idea about Southernness.
Like you're backwards thinking.
Yeah, backwards thinking, stupid, you know, stuff like that. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, no, that's not the case. So it's really interesting. It boils down to this idea of a rural South, which we'll talk about in a minute with this idea of like hick hop. You know what I'm saying? And just Southernness in general, which seems to be more applicable to these urban spaces that you were talking about earlier.
Right. So when Big Boy talks in West Savannah about how you might call us country, but we're only Southern, did you understand where he was coming from at that particular time?
Yeah, I feel like he wasn't talking to other Southern listeners. I feel like he was talking to those non-Southern audiences who still want to make this like bullshit assumption that, oh, Southern means country backwards and country means stupid and backwards. And he was like, no, you know, it's more complicated than that.
You might call us country, but we's only Southern. And I don't give a fuck, people won't spot the spark another. And it don't stop, and it don't quit.
So when you get to like a Big Crit
doing his country shit,
who was doing his country shit, and he's from like Meridian, Mississippi, like there are no immediately recognizable urban spaces. They're small cities, you know what I'm saying? Like Jackson, Meridian would be one of them. But I mean, like in terms of how we think about cities today, Mississippi doesn't come on that map.
Let me tell you about this super fly, dirty, dirty, third coat, muddy water, shout it, pop that pussy if you wanna. Let me tell you about this old school, blowing lean, candy, yes, and collard greens, pocket full of stone, ride clean. Let me tell you about this country shit.
There might be biases between urban Southern artists and rural Southern artists.
Sure.
And one that immediately comes to mind for me is Field Mob, because the Benny.
Those are your hometown heroes, aren't they?
Listen, you don't even know, man. Like when, you know, Project Dreams came out, like, you know, they're talking about these particular ideas of poverty.
Right.
And what that poverty looks like in these rural Southern spaces. So I think that, you know, to be cognizant of where you're from and have that to inform how you view this idea of the South is very important and often kind of like misconstrued and overlooked in larger conversations about the music. So it's like when Field Mob came out with, you know, Channel 613 from Ashy to Classy, I still bump that shit at least like once a month. You know what I'm saying?
Gorillas, rock choppers and drug figures. We bust shots and slugs on hot blocks with thug figures. I'm done talking, I come walking, short stalking. If it's beef, I shine in the dark and I keep my gun spalking. But it's the dirty, we young figures, blood pickers. We don't stunt in front with ya, we hunt and come hit ya. Yeah, though, that crab me is fear my runness. We go toe to toe and in the world we tell them Sean done this. They got me laughing and joking.
They were initially in Albany. Like, they were referencing shit that you can see and feel in Albany. And then they get signed at the time to Ludacris's label, and they move from Albany to Atlanta. And when they make that transition, the music starts to sound different. Not necessarily saying they're going away from who they are and what they were doing. They were still quite dope, but the music started to sound different.
I'm a slut, I'm a hoe, I'm a freak. I got a different girl every day of the week. You're too smart, you be a dummy to believe that stuff that you heard that they say about me. They say that I'm this, they say that I'm that. But all of it's fiction, none of it's facts. But you don't be hearing it about your love. You let it go in one ear and out the other. Now he say, she say, they say it, I heard it. Be fake, we can't let it get on our nerves. She miserable, she just wants it to be like her. Misery needs company. So don't listen to that vine of grapes there. Nothing but liars hating, I bet it wouldn't.
And I think that in Georgia, that's particularly a challenge. Is because usually when folks think about Georgia, they automatically think Atlanta.
Right.
And for those of
right.
us who are not from Atlanta, like all the time, like, oh, where you from? I'm from Albany. Either to say, oh, New York. No, I ain't from no goddamn New York. Oh, you from Albany, Georgia. Okay. Well, where in Atlanta is that? And I'm like, I didn't say I was from Atlanta. And then they're like, oh, my bad. Well, how far is that from Atlanta.
From Atlanta.
So it's like, you know, that idea of the outside the perimeter, and it's like, you know, you have Atlanta and then you have the real Georgia. You know?
Yeah, right.
That's actually, you know, reflected, I think, in the music too. So if you have like an Outkast and a Goody Mob, then you also have a Bubba Sparks, who's from LaGrange.
Gosh. Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
The country fed folks from LaGrange. Shout out to Troop County.
I kept my Bible closed, but God's gotta know. My heart was never not aligned with his will. My mind was hellish hot. It says go when it's wrong, then it tell me stop. If it's too right, more than a few nights, I stayed up, no sleep, just a heartbeat and some teardrops. But mama, fear not, I'm coming home.
Take me back home to the brain. Walk me down.
this conversation about country, hip hop, Miss Christina, without talking about the Nappy Roots out of Kentucky.
Oh my God, I remember.
You don't necessarily think about Kentucky as like a hip hop state. But I mean, like, Nappy Roots comes out, when they come out with like Aw Naw and
Hell
like
nah.
Po' Folks, you know what I'm saying? That's like the first introduction to Anthony Hamilton for me, and his voice with, you know, who sounds like the groans and moans of a thousand slaves past.
Oh,
you know
Regina.
What I'm saying? No, it does. That man sounds like he's been through some things.
Mm.
No more. And they wonder why we act this way. Nappy boys gonna be okay.
We're gonna be okay.
This morning, all my colorful dressing, calmless joint hands. Got to cope with the presses.
But like, it didn't sound like the southern hip hop that was coming out at the time period. So like early 2000s is when the rise of crunk and trap were coming out. They didn't sound anything like that. They stayed true to their rural Kentucky roots, and I really appreciated that, because that was, you know, that was genre bending with their work even then, because they used what was kind of familiar. They had like the banjos and like the bluegrass. There's a need to align with the music scene that's coming from your respective area. And if that music scene doesn't recognize or embrace where you're coming from, then yeah, then that becomes a challenge, is to be like, how do I maintain my identity as an artist who comes from these areas that are otherwise overlooked in favor of these more recognizable, immediate, like, music cities like in Atlanta?
Well, speaking of alignment, Regina, you mentioned Lil Nas X earlier, who I think is a really interesting case study in how people choose to, like, define country.
I got the horses in the back, horse stock is attached, head is matted black, got the boots black to match, riding on a horse, ha, you can whip your Porsche, I've been in the valley, you ain't been up off that porch, now can't nobody tell me nothing.
Initially, there was this controversy in the Billboard charts over whether that song even deserved to be on the country charts once Billboard decided to remove it.
Well, help me out, because how exactly does the Billboard, like, rankings and the list work? It's not like, oh, I like this, let me just listen to this a couple times and it'll boost it up on the charts. Like,
right.
Is there like a method behind it or what?
I think Lil Nas X is a testament to how Billboard charts have reconfigured in recent years and has created sort of this controversy, right? So it used to be really, like, once upon a time, a long time ago, the methodology for charting, like, whether a song was a hit was, like, a little bit more straightforward than it is now. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it was pre-internet. But in 2012, Billboard decides, like, we really need to factor in digital streams and, like, downloads as we're charting these particular genres. And so in 2012, they sort of reconfigured their charts, including country, but also affecting, like, R&B and so on and so forth, so that these digital streams, like, factored in. The problem was that once Billboard decided to reconfigure the charts to include digital streams and downloads, there wasn't really a distinction between whether that song was really charting by country listeners for country listeners, as opposed to like a pop listener that just happened to check out this one country song, for example. So all of a sudden, the country music ecosystem, which is more beholden to terrestrial radio than a lot of the genres still working today, they're sort of being shut out once Billboard decided to like reconfigure it. And I think that's the main source of tension behind Old Town Road, is that when Billboard decided to remove Old Town Road from the country charts, the reason why Old Town Road had charted in the first place was mostly because of interest by hip hop stations. So in the very beginning of Old Town Road's life, Lil Nas X had registered the song as country.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, at the very beginning, it was hip hop stations that were actually playing this song that Lil Nas X had tagged as country.
It was country trap.
Exactly. That's what Lil Nas X called it. And, you know, in his mind, like, it deserves to be on both charts.
It does deserve to be on both charts.
So the issue that, I guess, Billboard took with it was that country radio, i.e. still like a major player in this ecosystem, had no say as to whether that would appear on the country charts or not.
So like, I mean, like it talks about like the corporatization of popular music.
Mm-hmm.
And then even on a different level, it also talks about how listening practices are still racialized in a particular type of way. So like, when you think about popular music, and country music is part of that conversation, but usually popular music is something that is accessible, or, you know, for lack of a better word, is something that makes white folks comfortable. And country music was one of those genres that was, I guess, sonically aligned with this cultural idea of whiteness, particularly white southernness, that is inaccurate, kind of like the conversations about rock and roll. You know what I'm saying? Like, black folks, that's us. What's happening is that when you have a Lil Nas X in an Old Town Road, you have a decentering of white folks, particularly white men.
It has to be the men, because there's this country writer named Julie Wright who specifically calls out like country music's rhinestone ceiling. Oh. And she was saying that basically, like, within these same spaces, it's like women, these really prominent women. We're talking about like a Carrie Underwood, like somebody who should not have to worry about where her career is right now, is still complaining about like, I've been in this industry for so long and I can't get radio play. I can't get shine at all. Yeah,
they don't play Carrie.
So you're absolutely right. So like, country music is still sort of beholden to, we have to say it, white male gatekeepers.
Okay, so like before we started recording, you were putting me on game about this thing called Tomato Gate. What the hell is that?
Tomato Gate was when one radio exec in particular made some offhand comment about how these radio stations really don't want to be playing two women country artists in a row.
What?
Because he was saying that these women country artists are the tomatoes to and the salad, and that all the male artists
are the cucumbers.
Like, no, ma'am. No, they are apparently the lettuce. They are the most substantial part of this salad.
Well, what if it's like bullshit lettuce, like the little iceberg shredded lettuce that they try to give you on like a, you know, rinky dink sandwich or something?
It's like
that.
I don't even want his salad. Like, that sounds.
What if I don't? What if I don't want iceberg? What if I want like a regular?
These are very substantial questions.
What if I wanted a regular salad or a spinach salad?
No, but these are exactly the stakes that we're talking about, right? So, like, when a Lil Nas X comes out with a song called Old Town Road, that, like, disrupts the entire world order that they had established for themselves.
Riding on a tractor, lean all in my blood. Cheated on my baby, you can go and ask me. My life is a movie, bull riding in boots. Cowboy hat from Gucci, Wrangler on my booty. Can't nobody tell me nothing. Can't nobody tell me nothing.
So you have this OG in country music.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, if anybody could do that crossover, it's gonna be Billy Ray Cyrus.
Oh my God, how amazing.
Baby's got a habit, diamond rings and Fendi sports bras. Riding down Rodeo in my Maserati sports car. God knows stress, I've been through all that. I'm like a Marlboro man, so I kick on back. Wish I could roll on back to that old town.
And the great thing is that Billy Ray doesn't try to be somebody he's not. Like,
okay.
I feel like so often that we have these conversations about white folks and hip-hop is that there's this like belief that there is like this hyper performance of what they think black folks want them to do to be to get like an honorary or, you know, temporary black folks card.
A plate, if you will.
Yeah, a plate, you know what I'm saying? And they don't want like, you know, the burnt parts. They want like some decent, you know, chicken and shit. So it's like, oh, I need to act this particular way. I need to sound this particular way. I need to reference these things. And Billy Ray Cyrus is up in there like, listen, man, I'm on my horse.
I'm the Marlboro man.
He brings in that really tricky idea of allyship. Like, folks don't like to have that conversation with, you know, what does allyship look like? I mean, on the one hand, when you think about this idea of an ally, it's when you make space for somebody who's marginalized to bring their truth to the forefront.
Right.
And on the one hand, like, he's standing up for this teenage black kid. That's right. One way he's being an ally. The second way he's being an ally is, this is a hybrid of country music and hip-hop. I'm going to stick to the country music part of this hybrid. I'm going to still be dope, and I'm going to let him shine. And then, like, I think it was, I don't know if it was at the old Opry or not, but when they put up the sign, like, congratulations to Billy Ray Cyrus, like, they just completely marginalized Lil Nas X.
As in, and they didn't have him on the side.
He wasn't even under enough. And then here comes Billy Ray with his homemade, that's my baby at graduation sign.
I picked up this poster board at Kroger, you know.
Yeah, he probably like put it up real quick and he put the sign and he was like, I wouldn't be here if it was like that. For me, I was like, all right, he's about that life. If there was an example of allyship in this more current moment, that would be the example. Like, showing, like, I didn't just do this by myself. Because it's so easy to try to erase the work that black folks have put into these quote-unquote non-black musical genres.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, oh, country music is for white folks. No, it's not. It started with black folks. In the same way that, you know, jazz started with black folks, rock and roll started with black folks. And for Billy Ray to acknowledge that he was just part of this conversation, he wasn't the conversation.
That
really just made me want to like dust off my little single tapes.
See,
and go do the achy breaky dance.
And if you tell my heart, my achy breaky heart, he mightn't blow up and kill this man.
Hey, what's going on? This is Regina. So, question for you. What do you want to hear us talk about on future episodes of the podcast? Go to bottomofthemap.media to share your thoughts and tell us a bit about yourself. We're trying to get all in your business. Again, that's bottomofthemap.media. Holla.
All right, Regina. So we both love this video that hip-hop artist, music instructor, and our personal friend.
It's our good friend.
Yes, Mr. Ja'Cory Arthur, a.k.a. 1200, posted on his Instagram earlier this year.
I got my whole life with this video.
It's because, I mean, clearly understandable, because when you're watching this video, you're seeing Ja'Cory basically leading a whole lot of school children through a sing-along of Old Town Road. It's the best thing ever. He's posted up on his xylophone. So we called up Ja'Cory and asked about how we got this Kitty Coachella going, as well as the song's unexpected appeal.
Calling up Ja'Cory, but he's not answering the phone.
What's the song, Mr. Telephone Man?
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong with my line.
Mr. Telephone Man.
When I call Ja'Cory's number, I get a click every time. Every time.
Oh, man.
Peace, can you hear me?
Hey there.
All right, if something sounds off, let me know. I've never done this before.
Are you recording on your side too, Ja'Cory?
Now I am.
Oh.
All right, you can hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
Perfect. Peace, love, and light. I'm Ja'Cory Arthur, born and raised in West End, Louisville. I am also known as 1200, Mr. Arthur, and Professor Arthur as well. I was invited to this elementary school to help them celebrate their improvement of attendance. I get there around 8:30 in the morning. They're coming into school dancing. It's a party, and I brought my xylophone with me. So I told the DJ, we'll quiz the kids, I'll play different melodies, and then if they get it right, we'll drop the song. And they're elementary school kids, so we started with Baby Shark.
Baby Shark, do-do-do-do-do, Baby Shark, do-do-do-do-do, Baby Shark, do-do-do-do-do, Baby Shark, Mommy Shark.
They were clapping, doing all the moves, everything. Then we did Little Einsteins, one of my favorite shows, and they got that, and they bopped because it was the trap remix, of course.
We're going on a trip in our favorite rocket ship, zooming through the sky, Little Einsteins, climb aboard, get ready to explore.
Then the last melody I played was Old Town Road, and within the first three notes, they started singing along, just shouting these lyrics. So we dropped the track, and I dropped my mallets after a while because, like I said, the kids were just so beautifully chaotic that I had to join in the fun.
You had to show them kids how to get crunked the right way, though. You had to show them a little bit.
Absolutely. And they were probably shook because they were like, man, he got the xylophone, and now he's bopping with us. What is this?
Mr. Arthur, if I may, you are
Professor.
Professor Arthur. Oh, excuse me. You are also a hip hop artist in your own right as 1200. I guess talk to us about the significance of a song like An Old Town Road.
It's significant because you have this crossover element of country music and hip hop, which is something that I'm totally into because I fuse classical music and hip hop. So it shows you not only can we, you know, dwell and thrive in these other genres, even though you think about the fact that we kind of created country music, but it also shows you kind of the ugly side of the music industry in the world, because there was so much animosity around him being on the country charts. But then he, you know, kind of pulled the rabbit out the hat and had Billy Ray Cyrus hop on that joint. And now it has that, you know, that stamp, that validity to it. So it's beautiful because it shows that we can exist in different realms.
So, I mean, like, one of the things I'm thinking about, too, is you said that you're a professor, but you also have this upcoming really dope podcast called The Music Box, right? Which is basically a music teacher in your pocket. But I'm curious though about like how as a music teacher talking to these kids, how that particular song, it seemed like that touched them in a different way than like other, you know, popular rap music or popular music out now did. I mean, like, what do you think it is about this song that made it kind of like this kumbaya moment for kids across, you know, everything, across, you know, religion, creed, gender. They like
grades,
you know, like everybody got horses in the back, you know what I'm saying? So what do you think it is about this song in particular?
I think children have this sense of imagination that we lose as we get older. Over time, you slowly start to become an adult and you get indoctrinated in society, and you might not be as into horses in the back, this imaginary horse and this imaginary road. So for the children, them screaming and shouting in this kind of fantasy world and just having fun, the music sounds incredible. And then when you add on these lyrical layers of something that they can vibe with and imagine and think of it almost like a cartoon, it resonates with them a lot differently than them, you know, shouting about something that might be going on in the hood that they have no true understanding of.
Being able to blend genres and blend experiences is such a transformational, you know, and joyful experience.
Yeah, I think that is sort of the main thing, right? I think country music more often than not gets associated with these ideas of like tradition, right? I think that's typically the word that like comes to mind when we think of country music. It is traditional in its own way. But the thing is, the people who have always kind of pushed it forward have always bucked tradition. So when I think about the making of Lil Nas X, about how, you know, this Dutch producer by the name of Young Keo pulls up a Nine Inch Nails instrumental that is made available in Creative Commons, puts a trap beat to it, and then sends it over to Lil Nas X for like $30 across, you know, the ocean. Country music in of itself has this really rich history of trying to redefine what being an American is all about. Why can't Lil Nas X fit into that story?
Can't nobody tell me nothing.
Thank you for listening to Bottom of the Map, brought to you by WABE and PRX. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a review. It'll help more people find this show. Follow Bottom of the Map on your social media platforms at BOTMPod. Again, that's BOTMPod. Bottom of the Map is hosted by Christina Lee and Dr. Regina Bradley. Produced by Floyd Hall. That's me. Edited by Stephen Key. Our executive producers are Jaanne Berry and Christine Dempsey. Ayanna Taylor is our project manager. Our theme music is produced by Smith and Cash. Special thanks to Mike Johns and Lois O.G. Reitzes. This program is made possible, in part, by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people. Follow, subscribe, connect. Holla.
We love you, Roy.